Runners are an interesting breed. We are in like I do believe I know exactly what you're talking about, where you see all these memes that says like, I run to eat tacos or I run to eat donuts. There's a joke up to a point in that. And I was always on the other side of that point where I was like, yeah, well, I have to run if I want to eat a donut, or I have to run if I want to eat tacos, right? I was on that unhealthy side of it. And I think that's what's kind of so dangerous as runners, because we do believe that all we need to do is run and we'll be fine and healthy, but that's so far from the truth.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultra Marathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. My guest this week is Sierra Carter. Sierra is a returning guest. And the last time we spoke, we just ran out of time. We had a lot to say, and I really didn't feel like we'd gotten it all in. So I'm in a mastermind group with Sierra, and she was talking about wanting to do more episodes. And I said, hey, let's go back and do this again. So it was a very lively conversation. She had a lot of good information to share, and hope you enjoy this conversation I had with Sierra Carter. Thank you for being here, Siri. I'm really glad you can be here.
Yeah, thank you, Eric. I'm honored to be here. I absolutely love being on the podcast with you. This is my second time, so I
Yes,
can't wait to see
yes.
where
And
this one goes.
I thought, and it's like a lot of times I have some gaps between people if I have them back. But you and I are in a mastermind group together, and we were talking about
Yeah.
it. And I thought you're doing some things that we really didn't. I mean, we could have gone on for the last time you were here. So I thought, but yeah, let's have you come back and we'll talk again. So do a real quick, give a quick, quick
Yeah.
reminder to people of how did you get started running and what
Yeah.
you're going to ask you.
So real quick, I got started running like kind of when I was in high school. I wasn't cross country. It wasn't track. I wasn't really one of those. I played basketball, but my mom bought a treadmill for herself, never used her treadmill. I used the treadmill, started at 3.5 miles per hour for 1 mile, and decided I loved it. And I just kept kind of going through from there. And then I kind of went through an eating disorder halfway through high school, really learned from it, got real into fitness, wanted to help other girls that were going through the exact same thing, struggling mentally, struggling physically, and struggling emotionally. And I kept running, and I started running, started with that 5K, then the 10K, then the half marathon. It's all the way up to marathons now. I'm actually debating on an ultra. Maybe this year, maybe at the beginning of next year. So
Very,
that's going to
very
be fun. That's
cool.
fun to
Very
announce
cool.
on this
Yeah.
podcast.
That happens. I mean, now that, ultra marathons has kind of become, back when marathons used to be the thing, it was kind of not too many people knew about ultras, but it's become very mainstream, the
It is. And
ultra
I mean, I think that what's funny is a lot of people, I mean, everybody on this podcast obviously knows, but what a lot of people don't realize, I always get the question. They're like, Sierra, what's an ultra compared to like a marathon? Like, isn't a marathon far enough? Well, I looked up the ultra definition, and I had to myself, and it literally says anything over a marathon. So my boyfriend and I saw this sticker the other day. It said 27.4. He's like, what's that? Because and I was like, I actually don't know what that sticker is for. So I looked it up, and it says I got lost. And technically, this person ran an ultra.
Yes. Well, and for trail runners especially, I mean, we in trail running we call those bonus miles, when you get lost, and and that is just because, oftentimes, and especially especially in ultras, your perception and your mind doesn't, I mean,
Yeah.
there's, I mean, you have to concentrate on a lot of things, and with going that far, your mind starts to you know, not be as sharp. And it's real easy, to miss.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it's real easy. So I went running. So I started running with some ultra marathoners in my hometown of Los Alamos, New Mexico. Funny enough, they told me that like half that town is like an ultra marathon town. I didn't know that growing up there. I never ran the trails, but I guess I came out of it. So I guess now that's why I'm a runner. But I went running with them when I went back. Of course, I was sucking wind. It's at 7,200 feet elevation. I'm at sea level here in Florida.
So. That's a pretty big jump to do, you know, to drive up to 7,000 feet and try to.
You think so? I mean, I told them, all fairness, I literally told them ahead of time. I'm like, I'm not going to be able to keep up with you. No, it's okay, Sierra. I'm like, we'll wait for you. I thought I was going to pass out. My only saving grace was everybody stopped to pet this really cute dog on the trails. And this dog gave me enough time to catch my breath and try to like regain my consciousness because I was going to pass out.
Well, and you know, I tend to be a back of the pack runner. And so if I run with a group, you know, a lot of times, well, and there's a group that is here in Kansas City, and you know, they advertise no one left behind. And so what happens is they will run to a point on the trail and wait for everyone to catch up.
I love
and
that.
And so, you know, I'm usually, you know, 4 or 5 minutes behind them. And so they've already caught their breath when I get there and they're ready to go. And so I never get that. So yeah, I'll have to look for the dog and see if.
I'm telling you, they got so distracted by this cute little puppy and everyone's like, oh, puppy. And they stopped to pet it. And I'm like, yeah, I'm panting so hard. And this guy, the owner of the dog was like, oh, you guys are first. He literally said first time running. And I was like, no, I'm from Florida. And he's like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. I was like, yeah. But like the sad thing is, like, I kept telling them, like, I grew up there. And to me, to go somewhere I grew up in, to be sucking wind like that, mm-hmm. It's really hard mentally because it upsets you. No matter like, you know, if you're out there for fun or anything, it's just a smack in the face, but I also find it so humbling.
That's right. Well, and you know, your body adapts, and it adapts rather quickly. I mean, that's a common thing for people who live, well, and even, I mean, where I live in Kansas, I'm at, you know, 900 feet above sea level. And so I always suck wind when I go to, you know, up in the mountains and just, it's not fun. Now there is, in fact, I think Tara might, we know a breathwork instructor, and yeah. There is a method where you can train for high altitude, even at sea level, without there one is. Of those, you know, they make these masks or, you know, there are things that you can do to, but there are breathwork right. practices that can be done just on your own to get yourself ready. But it takes several weeks of planning to do that.
So. It does. But you know, I really actually am very focused on my breath work as a runner. I think my dad used to teach me the breathing exercises to quote unquote expand your lungs for higher mm-hmm. altitude. Now, of course, we know like it has a lot to do with like the blood oxygen content and how your blood thins out and other details like that. But it is like there's a lot of breath work that you can do to expand your lungs, which I'm such a huge advocate for. No matter, even if you're not planning to go to high altitude, it helps you become a better runner. So yes. It's like, why not do it anyways?
One of the, I remember there's a book I read called Breath by James Nestor. Yeah. And in that book, he cites a study done that your life expectancy can be directly tied to the capacity of your lungs. So that people who have a larger lung capacity, you know, will live a longer life. And
that's interesting.
I was like,
yeah.
And so and that was near the first of his book. So I was like, okay, I'm going to pay attention to what this has to say because, well, and also before I get too far, I know a lot of times, you know, people who listen to podcasts or listen to videos will drop out toward the end. So I wanted to give you a chance because you are a podcaster and I wanted to give you a chance to talk about your podcast.
Yeah, no, thank you.
So who's your audience and, you know, what do you talk about?
I say my audience, we're a fun group. We like to, I'll say my audience is extremely hardworking. Everybody, you know, a lot of them, when they reach out to me, everyone seems to have a full-time job. We're trying to balance work, life, career, social life, health, fitness, nutrition, all these things, and we just can't seem to understand how people seem to have it together, right? And so it's called run, thrive, survive. So we're running our lives. Some days we're surviving. Some days, you know, it's like, I got through it. I maybe had to order out. Not everything's perfect. I survived. And then other days we're just on top of our game. We're thriving. We're excelling in our career, whatever that may be. And I use a lot of this for, and I use this towards like mental, emotional, and physical health. So I talk about running a lot. I'm a runner. I love running. And I love people who want to run, but don't want to be the fastest runner. Because a lot of us know that we're never going to be like those two women that just made the half marathon and the marathon.
I heard they were running
this past weekend.
Blistering pace for, for 26 miles.
Yeah. And I mean, like the thing for that is like, I hit this group of people in my podcast. We talk about everything. We talk about anything from relationships, your social life, running, training for a marathon, or just like what to do for your general health. We talk about it all. And it's just, there's such a big group of us. We're like, we're not really here to win the races, but we're here to feel better mentally, emotionally, and physically. So we really use mental health or running for our mental health to excel in our careers and to run our lives.
Yeah, that's cool. And I know you have a wide variety of people on talking about all kinds of health. It's more than about just running. And I have done the same thing with my podcast. My podcast is the ultra marathon mindset. And so I'm a runner. Yeah. I like to talk about running. But the mindset is important. And I know you have been one who has done that. And you've got a study. You're working on psychology certification, if I remember right.
Yeah. So I'm actually working on my BCBA, which is a board certified behavior analyst. And it's actually been a challenge because for the BCBA, not the understanding the behavior, work, getting the hours accumulated has been a challenge because most people in this field actually go to help kids with autism or disruptive behavior. I'm purposely positioning myself to help people's behavior in health and fitness and also nutrition. Like I said at the beginning of this podcast, I struggled with an eating disorder. And it wasn't until I got to college, until I started studying psychology, that I realized a lot of it were these behaviors, these routines, and these really bad habits that affected my mindset, that affected my mental health, that affected my overall physical health, because I was in the hospital, almost died, that if I just changed, if I just knew back then what I know now, I could have avoided it. Yes. Mm-hmm. I would still struggle mentally, but there's ways to set up your environment, ways to react to triggers and different things like that. So that's why I'm in the behavior fitness realm of it.
Yeah. And I know you've mentioned some things on your social media about body image and, you know, I think, you know, typically, I mean, as you know, men think, oh, that's just things that women struggle with. But I think mm-hmm. it is for, you know, a large part. I mean, I know when I look at a picture of myself, I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, that really adds 10 pounds.
and you know, if you don't mind me interrupting you, like that, what you just said is so important. And for men, women, whoever is listening, it's okay to struggle with your body image, because just because you're a man doesn't mean you have to be, you know, you're still struggling too. But I feel like it's more, you have to be silent about it. And I feel, to me, that's very detrimental for society. I've known plenty of guys that have struggled with their body image. The sad reality with that one is they actually take it out on people around them. So like,
yeah,
there's just so many examples of that. Yeah.
Yeah. That is, I can see that. Guys tend to project out a lot of times more than, you know.
Yeah. And women take it more personally. Like we kind of like hide it internally. And I think that's why, yes, guys struggle a lot. They can struggle with eating disorders. They struggle with body dysmorphia, body image. But women, you see it more prevalent because they don't project it outwards as much. They can. They still can. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. But you'll see them, you know, heading to the bulimia, heading to the straight anorexia. Like that's kind of where they start to go towards, where men, they start to do the, maybe the muscle, the bodybuilding, or really hitting the gym, maybe in an unhealthy way. Those unhealthy behaviors kind of surface so many different types of ways.
So what, I mean, and for the, I think a lot of us, the difficulty is we don't really recognize that in ourselves. Mm-hmm. So I mean, what are some of the things that, you know, we can do to kind of, you know, I guess, self-monitor? Is that where you kind of will start with talking to people?
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing is you have to be honest with yourself, which it can be the hardest thing, right?
I don't really want to be honest with myself a lot of times.
So a lot of times when people struggle with these things, they already know that there's a problem. They know deep down inside that there's a problem. They will not admit it though. I can't tell you how long it took me to admit that I had a problem. It literally took me lying in the hospital bed and them telling me, hey, you're anorexic. And I'm like, ah, really? Really? Is that why I'm here? You know, but it took that long. So for a lot of people, but I kind of questioned it up until then thinking, well, I'll give my example. I would think in high school, if I ate this piece of food, it's a muffin. We'll say I have a muffin. Mm-hmm. If I ate this, I had to go run 2 miles right after school. And I would be constantly uncomfortable until I was able to run and work it off. So for me, the feeling of comfort was starving and feeling just like thin. That should be a red flag. That should be a red flag to anybody. And I think that's one of the most common signs, but people don't talk about it enough where you may feel this all the time. To me, that was normal. To other people, this may be normal. And maybe if they're listening to this podcast, they realize that's not how it should go. That's not a normal feeling. A normal feeling is being able to eat, not overeating. Everybody overeats. We all get uncomfortable once in a while, but being able to eat without thinking, oh my God, I have to go to the gym. I have to work this off, or, oh, this muffin's going to cost me at least 20 push-ups to work off. That's unhealthy thinking. Healthy thinking is saying, I ate to nourish my body. Now I can imagine the food going like repairing my muscles, helping my brain function, things like that. Like I had to teach myself a different way of looking at food because my relationship with food was so distorted.
Well, and I think a lot of runners fall into that. Yeah. You can see that on Facebook. People will say, you know, I run to eat. I was in that when I was younger and running. I thought that running could make up for a bad diet. You know I could eat what I want and be able to run and keep my weight where I wanted it to be.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting. Runners are an interesting breed. And I will say that in a way, we're runners. We know this.
Yeah.
It's not news to us, but we are in like, I do believe, I know exactly what you're talking about, where you see all these memes that says like, you know, I run to eat tacos or I run to eat donuts. There's a joke up to a point in that. And I was always on the other side of that point where I was like, yeah, well, I have to run if I want to eat a donut or I have to run if I want to eat tacos, right? I was on that unhealthy side of it. And I think that's what's kind of so dangerous as runners, because we do believe that all we need to do is run and we'll be fine and healthy. But that's so far from the truth. Like we need strength training. We need yoga. And when I say strength training, a lot of people always think, oh, they're in the gym lifting like thousands of pounds. I'm like, that's not it. I do functional weight training. Like, I barely even use weights. I just do body, like all body weight now, push-ups, squats, lunges, side leg raises, anything that's going to help my muscles be stronger so I can run better. But it's such a distorted thing that runners, especially when they're first starting, because everybody thinks running is the fastest way to weight loss. Beginning of every single New Year's. I watched your Instagram. We had a meme. You had a TikTok where it's pretty much like we just threw out our New Year's resolutions, right? Yeah. Everybody probably tried to run the first like week and a half of New Year's. Realize it's a lot more work. There's probably more to it. It's all mental. It's all emotional. It's a lot of things that go into one. And they thought it was going to be their quick fix to weight loss, to that 20 pounds they want to lose before their upcoming birthday. And it didn't work. So they threw it out. And I think that's like the big problem, or maybe now they're holding on to it and now it's unhealthy because they're overtraining with running and they're under eating. And one thing that I have to just mention, highlight, almost just like highlight, this is my big, if you take anything away from this podcast talk, if you under eat, your body actually holds on to fat. And this is like, if somebody had just told me this as a high schooler, like, hey, you're not eating. You know why your belly fat's like not going away? It's because you're starving yourself. Your body doesn't know when it's going to get food next. And it's like, oh, I'm going to hold on to this fat as fuel because like, I'm not getting any more food. So I'm going to hold on to this. And with that, it makes it like triple hard to lose weight. You actually lose more weight if you ate more while you're overtraining. And it's just like such a spiral that it just, what makes sense should make sense, but it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. So where does I know a lot of people do intermittent fasting. Yeah. Where does that fit in?
So it's funny because I always talk about this because I'm like, I have looked at it. I've looked at the studies and I personally just don't understand it from a scientific view. I just don't, because it doesn't make as much sense as it should, other than maybe it's helping the people with really unhealthy behaviors of snacking all day and all night. Because technically you shouldn't be going these like 16, 17, 18 hours long periods of not eating. But if people are getting enough fuel within that 8-hour period, I can see how it's going to help the body digest it until you get to that next period. Because your body almost knows in that habitual routine that I've got this fuel until next time. But at the same time, if you're not habitual and have it on a good routine and your body's not used to it, it almost works against you at the same time. So there's a lot to it, to be honest with you. And again, I think it's like one of those things that has to be so strict. It's almost like the keto diet. Like if you're not doing it to the exact point that you need to for the keto diet, it doesn't work. And people will do it. They say they intermittent fast 3 times a week. That doesn't make any sense to me. I'm not a fan of it. I can say though that I think the big difference between intermittent fasting versus just not eating is intermittent fasting, you are eating within the time frame. When you're starving yourself and your body's starting to hold on the fat, it's most likely because you're like never eating. So at least in intermittent fasting, you are eating. It's just like letting your body digest and it's controlling your behaviors of eating. You know, you don't want to be eating super late at night. That's just not really good for your metabolism. And you can't sleep very well with that. You don't want to be snacking like 24/7. And if you know you can't eat that donut in the morning because your time frame starts at 10 a.m., that might actually benefit you. So I could see it in that sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have had experience with intermittent fasting and it is comfortable for me. Now I don't wait till 10 a.m. I don't wait till 10 a.m. I eat as soon as, I eat breakfast fairly early. I prefer to eat lunch, you know, noon or a little after, and then don't eat until breakfast. And that works for me. But, but I don't do it all the time and I'm not a fanatic about it, but the problem that I would have is if I eat in the evening, I would eat more than I needed. And so,
it helps. It helps that behavior of like not eating so much. It kind of like brings the awareness to it. I think that's where it really lies. Of course, I'd still have to like read way more into it. But I just like, you know,
well, I know a lot of people, it's a big deal.
Make a lot of sense. You know, honestly, I really do think it's just on the behavior side though, because the people I know that have been super successful with it, I'm telling you, they used to eat all day long. Every time I saw them, they had the big gulps in their hand. Like they had everything. And then they went to intermittent fasting and they did really well on it. But I think it's because it made them one, aware of what they're eating, when they're eating it and how much they're eating. And two, it's like they had this shorter time frame. So they were really more like aware of, or conscientious of the type of food that they're going to eat within that time frame. Because you want food that's going to make you feel fuller longer. Right. So big gulps, donuts, Oreos, things like that. don't really fill you up for long periods of time. So you want to eat better foods. Like you want to eat the rice, the potatoes, your vegetables, things that will settle in your stomach for a longer period of time. So you're not hungry 30 minutes later. And I think that has a lot to do with it as well.
Yeah. And I found that eating fats gives me that was a thing that I took away from the keto, is that having some amount of fats. And so that kept me from being hungry if I get enough. So if I eat heavy on carbs or even too much protein, if I don't get enough fat,
it's true though. As a runner, it's so true.
It's true. You talk about behavior, helping people change their behavior. What are some things, we've been talking about food, but even what are some of the things that people can do around that, that behavior? You know, if they're struggling with, we're recording this at middle of January, struggling with, not keeping resolutions, and I know that's a big thing. What are some of the things that you advise people that they could take away?
So my biggest thing that I always tell people that are struggling, if they've tried to change, like let's say they've tried to change something 10 times, this is the 10th year of resolutions of the same thing. And I mean, it happens. It happens. Like, don't get me wrong. But,
well, that was me. I did that. I did. I was 15. I did 15 years, and I had tried to lose weight for 15 years.
I know. And it's just like one day something finally clicks. And like, I say a few things. So like, first is find the one thing that you want to work on. We like to make 20 resolutions, get really overwhelmed, and then throw them all away. Just like your TikTok. We just like, oh, this box of resolutions, I'm done. Like, I just can't. Like, it's just over. That's the first problem and first mistake that we make. I'm guilty too. I do this all the time with goals. I'm like, I have 20 different goals. None of them get done because I had 20 of them and I didn't know which one to focus on. So pick the one that means the most to you. If that's working out, stick with working out. If it's nutrition, stick with nutrition. Don't hear your friends say they're doing working out when you're doing nutrition and you're like, oh, I should switch over with them. No, stick to what you choose. And this is the biggest part of keeping it. Because if you can't stick to it and you keep switching around at first, you're going to lose it. Because you've already decided, I'm not super committed. If something better comes along the way, I'll head over there. So you got to trick your mind into thinking, this is my only option. I can only do this. I can only eat better this year. I can't even work out. I can only eat better. This is my only option. So that's step one, is just pick something. And then step two is make it a promise to yourself. So I always like to like poke and prod people. I'm not going to ask you this. How often do you break promises to your wife?
Not very often.
Not very often.
I mean, I don't do it. I don't do it. Yes. I have, but when I do, I feel terrible. There's an emotional tie to that promise. So that if I do break a promise, there's a deep sense of regret.
And that emotional tie is the key. That's exactly what I was looking for. That emotional tie, because resolutions, society has already set us up for failure with resolutions, if you actually think about it.
Right.
Because resolutions, we just assume that we're not going to keep them. Like, it's in the name now as a society of, oh, it's your resolution. You're like, yeah, you're like, it'll be gone by the middle of January or February.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, as society, we've set up that word to just be useless. So I like to say, make the promise to yourself, because if you make this promise to yourself, when you try to break it, or like when you accidentally break it, it's a lot more emotional. You're like, oh my God. And sometimes you do, you're like, I failed. Like, this is awful, kind of black and white thinking, but that's kind of our next step. But you want to make that promise to yourself because you want that emotional tie to it. And then my next step, so my three-step process, decide, make that promise, and then I always like to say that maintenance stage. So if you know that trans-theoretical model of behavior change, there's a maintenance stage. Like, once you surpass 6 months, you're in maintenance. And you want, you have the diamond. You want to do everything you can to guard this diamond. So ask yourself, you know, if you were a computer, what kind of security systems would you put in place? Like, if you missed a day at the gym, how, you know, if you're a black and white thinker, how can you make it up? Can you eat better? Maybe just eat a salad that night. Maybe that's your kind of your trade-off. Like, I didn't go to the gym, I was too tired, but tonight I'll eat a salad. You want these systems set up in place before you get to that point. That is the key. Before you get to that point, because if you get to that point and you're like, oh, maybe I should make a system now, you're like, nah, I'm too tired, I'm good, you know, I'm just gonna have a bag of cookies instead. That's where you really start, like, just kind of like steering off the road into the forest, and you're not going to be found, and you're going to go right back to the beginning. So you really want that maintenance stage system set up. So it's like, some of mine are, I'll do marathon training, for example. If I miss my long run on a Friday, well, I've made a goal. I have set Sunday and Monday, because those are the 2 days that I don't have to do anything early enough where I can still get it in the morning. Sunday and Monday, I have those 2 days as backup. So I trade out my days of running. So instead of running it on Friday, I got 6 miles on Friday. I have to do my 6 miles. I will get there. And then long run is pushed to Monday or Sunday. So it's kind of like a backup plan. And that's the maintenance stage. So I don't just miss the long run. I'm like, yeah, I'll do it next week. And then I go to next week, miss that long run. And I'm like, ah, it's fine, I got next week. And it just never happens. You mm-hmm. want those like little contingency plans along the way.
Do you, you were talking of kind of like salad as a penalty. Have you had, how?
I wouldn't say it's a penalty.
it brought up to mind, yeah. A guy that I knew, and I was in a mastermind group, and it was, you know, there, we had penalties for if we didn't make our goals, we had to write, well, we had to choose a penalty. And, you know, one guy wrote a check out to the opposite political party. And I mean, it was like, he had a big goal. He had a really big goal. And, I think he was a Democrat. So he wrote out a check to whatever Republican candidate was running, and it was a significant check. And, and he said if he didn't make his goal, he was gonna mail the check. Unfortunately, he posted about that and showed it on social media, and all of his friends roasted him because why are you supporting that political party?
But, oh my god! But that's so funny.
He should have kept that to himself. But it was a that was his motivation to get that. So does that kind of thing? I mean, that's a severe, I mean, you said salad, but, yeah. is that something that, you know, if you find would motivate people?
Yeah, I honestly, so there's a lot of people that would argue against that. I personally would argue for that. Maybe not that severe, but I would definitely argue that if you do something that it's just so adversive, just so, oh my God, if I don't reach this, this is going to be the end of the world type of deal. In your mind, don't make it harmful. Don't make it like terrible, like where you can't live with yourself afterwards. But if you do something like that, I mean, you're going to be so motivated to get to your goal. But I think the only issue I see with that, and honestly, I think your friend did a good thing of posting it and having his friends roast him, because you know how hard they're going to hold him to that. Mm-hmm. Like, they're going to hold him to that. So you just created this kind of like this community system of doing this insane thing of like holding you to your goals. So even on the days that you don't want to do anything, like, we're not always motivated. That's just life. The days that you're not motivated, they're still going to hold you to that goal. And you're going to be like, oh my God, all right, you're right, I got to go do that.
Or you'll have that in the back. You'll have that in the back of your mind. Yeah.
Yeah. Big time. Yeah. Big time. Or, you know, there's going to be some comment and you're going to be like, oh God, yeah, I got to get on this. And so I think that's actually really, a really, really good way to do it. Now, on the other side of it, a lot of people will do something like that, but they make it so adversive that it almost scares them away. Or it's harmful because they kind of just cross this line of, okay, that's too far, that's not fun anymore, mm-hmm. type of deal. And I think that's why a lot of people argue against that. And a lot of people argue against it because it puts some really unwanted stress. So I think you have to understand like how you are under stress on that type of stress. Some people are really not good with it. They're really bad with it. And they have to know that they just, that's not their method. Now for me, that's so much fun where I'd be like, oh, this is awful. We got to do it. Like, you know, like that's, I would do the same thing, but there are some people where we have to go alternate ways and they're more extrinsic looking for motivation. They want praise. They want people, you know, they're more of the groupies. And they most likely won't like that because it's almost like an outcast type of thing if they have to do this adversive thing because they didn't reach their goal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And for me, I found it counterproductive. It wasn't something that really, I mean, I did it, but I mean, it was not, I didn't find any added benefit, didn't find a benefit for it.
So you tried it for yourself and you didn't like it.
Well, I didn't, it was, I was in this group. And so we all had to pick something. And so, it at that point in my life, it didn't help me. And so that was back before I was doing the mindset stuff. And so I still had some issues that I had not resolved until 2017. So.
And I think I've also seen, cause there's a couple of companies, I've had clients with companies, if you don't reach your workout goal of the week, you put a dollar in this tip jar. Like every single week you have to put a dollar in the jar that you don't reach a certain goal. So it's kind of like the shaping process all the way up to a major goal of I don't know, like losing 10 pounds, but you have to put a dollar in if you don't reach a set goal by the end of the week. And then if you reach your goal, you're set into this drawing to win this jar of money at the very end. Now, for some people, this was really motivating because they're like, oh my God, I'm going to reach my goal and I'm going to win that jar of money. But some other people, and my client including, was one of those that was like, I give up halfway through, didn't want to do it, didn't want to lose any more money, didn't want to participate, did not care, where it almost just became like a huge, like, screw that type of deal. And it kind of like demotivated her and like rescinded her backwards. Because sometimes if you're so far behind on this goal and you weren't really in it to begin with, and now you have a really adversive problem on the other hand, it just like pushes you the other way. That's another problem with it. And that's why it's just like, you have to be very strategic about this.
So how do we help people find what motivates, what's their motivation?
That's a really good question. I really like that question because like half of me is like, you know, be honest with yourself again. You got to know yourself. Like, I think you love mindset. You love mindset coaching. I would honestly say you've got to look within yourself. Like, nobody knows you better than you. Some people pretend they do, but they don't. They're not inside your head. I'm not inside your head. You're not inside my head. And it's like things like this where I know what doesn't motivate me is yelling at me and telling me to do things. I do the opposite, right? But some people thrive on having people tell them what to do, you know? But for me, I'm not a structured person. I'm like, tell me the goal and I'll get there. God knows what path I'll take, but I'll make it, you know? And some people are like, I need the steps. If you don't give me the steps, I'm not going to make the goal. So it's like, you kind of have to just understand yourself. I'm not going to tell you to go take a personality test. I don't think that's really helped anybody. I think they're cool. I like reading about it.
They can help you. They can help you relate to other people who might be in your life when you understand kind of how you approach life. Yeah.
Right. And I think sometimes it's just like best to like really look at how you solve problems. Like if I were to ask you, so cabinets, when you build a cabinet, do you see the step-by-step process? Or do you just start building it and redoing the kitchen and just kind of hope for the best? Like what kind of, that sounds awful because I'm the second one. I'm like, oh, well, I'm not going to read the instructions, but like what kind of process would you take?
So, I mean, I've built a few cabinets. I mean, the process for, I don't need a detailed plan, but We redid our bathroom, our master bathroom, and we couldn't find a cabinet maker to give us a price on the vanity. I mean, we had four of them out, and they came and looked. They came out to our house, and then they never gave us a proposal.
Was this COVID? And was this during COVID?
No. This was back in like 2013.
Oh God, they stuffed them too.
And maybe it was later than that, but it was way before COVID. And you know, I told my wife, I said, "Oh, just screw it. I can build this." And so I measured the space and everything, and I got it done, and I got to the point where I was going to build the doors, and I'm like, that's beyond my skill. So I hired somebody to build, you know, cabinet company to build doors, and you know, they didn't have to do anything to come out and install. So it worked out. And so, but yeah, it was, I drew plans. But you know, a lot of handyman stuff that I do, I kind of know the steps. Like I was installing a ceiling fan today, and, it had this big warning. I showed it on social media. This big warning.
I saw that.
Yeah, said read the instructions before you try programming the, you know, and because it has a remote control. And so I was like, okay, I'm gonna have to read the instructions. And then I open up the fan and I look at it and I see the pieces and I went, the instructions are just for the remote, you know, for the installation. It's easy. And so I knew the. So yeah. I could just kind of visualize it and see how it went together. So that's more my approach to, well, my approach to life is that, you know, I don't want to know all the steps. I just, you know, let's just kind of, you know, we can make it work.
Right. Yeah. And see, and you know that about yourself. And now that you said that, I remember this Instagram post, because I remember you posting saying, like, you know, I was like, sometimes like this company must know me because it's things like that. And I think that's like the best self-discovery. Like even thinking about it now, it's like when you make jokes about yourself, that you know that about yourself, right? Like, you know, oh, they know me, they need instructions. And I'll say that throughout the day. Like my biggest thing is cooking, right? I cannot cook. And it's like, it's become a joke. Like it's actually becoming a joke on Instagram. People are sending me recipes and they're like, can you make this recipe? And I'm like, no, like, this is so ridiculous. So it's like things like that, where it's just like, I know myself, like cooking's, because I'm not good at following instructions, right? But I'm not intuitive.
You don't
on
have
what
to have
spices go with, oh, okay, what.
Yeah.
I'm not intuitive. Like I ate raw chicken and raw shrimp one time. And
the raw shrimp would be okay. The raw chicken is like, no, I've had raw chicken before.
It's not. It was just gummy chicken. I was like, oh, maybe this is a different type of chicken. It's just kind of gummy. And everyone's like, how'd you not know it was raw? I was like, I don't know. I've never encountered it. Right. So like intuitive, like I just know I'm not going to ever be Chef Ramsay. Like it's just not going to happen. So it's like things like that, where it's just like, you have to understand like what motivates you. So how I'll use cooking for my example. Tonight I made fajitas and I was so proud of myself. These fajitas were phenomenal fajitas, and it was all in my air fryer. It took me 10 minutes. I just cut up the onions, put some cumin and pepper and chicken, and I threw it in the air fryer and it did all the work. But here's the thing. It took a lot to get me to do that. A lot of contemplation this morning. A lot. I had to look for a recipe that like was easy, that didn't tell me too much about their family recipe and their traditions. And it just like got straight to the point.
Like, my wife doesn't like those either. She's like, just tell me what I have to do.
Exactly. It's just like, oh my God, just get to the recipe. I have to scroll down at least 10 pages. And then it was like, step two was, all right, go to the kitchen and see what you need. So I had to find the recipe and then go to the kitchen. Like, this is a lot for me. But I mean, I ran 20 miles this morning like it was nothing. I woke up and ran 20 miles. Mm-hmm. But trying to make fajitas, man, it was an all-day process in my mind. And then step two was, I just need to go to the store. Like, I spaced these out because it would wear me out, because my willpower for cooking is just not there. And then finally, I was like, all right, I'm going to put on my favorite music. So I paired this process with something I really, really love to do. And that is listen to music and jam out to my favorite music while I made these fajitas. Again, I literally bought the chicken that was pre-cut for me. I cheated on this, mm-hmm. But you know, I made this as easy as possible to show me cooking is possible. It can be as easy as you make it. And look, it comes out really good. And so it's that small win. Tonight was a very small win for cooking. For some people are like, fajitas are so easy. I'm like, okay, but this is a small win. And hopefully this win kind of gets my confidence up in cooking, gets my confidence to try some more, you know, more recipes. And this is why I always say to people, when it comes to running, you know, go outside and just walk down the street and come back. Mm-hmm. Like, that's all you need. It's a small win. I don't care if, you know, Usain Bolt's like, that's all you did. I could have done that in like 0.01 seconds. It's like, okay, cool. But I'm not there yet. It's just like, I just need to walk down the street and I need to come back. I think my favorite example of this was, is it in the Power of a Hat of Habit or Power of Habits or Atomic Habits?
Atomic Habits. Oh, yeah.
I don't know that
I haven't read either one of those, but
they're both really good.
There's a little,
I just get them mixed up.
A little book called The Kaizen Way, which kind of describes that. Kaizen is a Japanese term called incremental improvement, small improvements.
Yes.
And
this guy, I think in one of those books, Atomic Habit or Power of Habits, he shows up at the gym. He literally just shows up at the gym, sits there for a minute and leaves. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the first 2 days he showed up in the gym parking lot, looked at the gym doors and left. The next day he just went and signed up and then left. The next day after that, he went there, went to the bathroom for 5 minutes and left. I mean, like, it was just these small things to kind of inch your way into something he really did not want to do. And then I think like the end of the story was like, you know, he became like a huge weightlifter. He was big in the gym. Like, he always worked out his entire life. But what people don't realize is like, it takes so much willpower to do something you're either scared to do, you don't want to do, and you just have to get those small wins, and you just have to pat yourself on the back and be like, I did it. Like, that's, I did it. I'm very, very proud of myself. What do I do next? You know, you always have to think about what's next though.
Right. And the small steps, that's, you know, one of the things that, that I tell people is to start. I mean, this to start small. Once you've decided something, to start almost immediately.
Yeah.
To do something that pushes you toward whatever that thing is, because if you wait, your mind will talk you out of it because our minds, our minds don't, both our minds and our body, we get to a level and we don't want to change. I mean, and it's, there's it's a so resistance. True. And the thing is, you can be in a toxic environment. I mean, you can have toxic habits. Your rational thought tells you, if I continue down this road 20 years from now, you know, my health is going to be so much that I can't get it back. And logically know that, but still have the resistance to actually make the changes that are going, you know, that we really, really need to make. And it's because there's a part of our mind and also our body is kind of work together. That when you get to a level that feels that is comfortable, that's familiar. Well, you can even be uncomfortable. You can be uncomfortable where you're at, but the fact that it is familiar, your body and your mind will resist changing. And so if you try to make too big of a change, you trigger that feeling and your body and mind will sabotage what you want to do. So doing just a little bit, that's a strategy that will help you and just a little bit at a time, you can make big changes over the course of a year. And
absolutely. And I mean, like, I think what's interesting, what you just said, is like, if you change too much, it like triggers that thought process of like, whoa, like red flags, like alarms going off in your brain. And I think it's interesting because like, I've gotten to the point where like, I try to be so aware of my thoughts and my feelings and everything throughout the day. And like recently there's a lot been going on in my mind. And I was like, why am I going back to all these thoughts I had like 2 years ago? Like, why am I resorting to the same behavior, the same routines? Like, what triggered it? And I started to realize a lot of it was like the time of year, which sounds odd, but the time of year triggers a lot of different things. Like, you will see this in serial killers. Around the same time of year, like their traumatic event happens, they start to a killing spree, right? And that's like a huge thing. And so it's like the time of year. And then there's like just these little things, other people that like trigger off of what they say that bring back these other feelings. And what's interesting, really interesting, is when you're the most uncomfortable in life, you resort back to the things that make you the most comfortable, even if they're terrible habits, right? So smokers, they can be 10 years free of smoking. And then all of a sudden traumatic events happen in their life and they're like, revert right back to smoking. They haven't smoked for 10 years, but to them, it feels like they haven't smoked since yesterday because there's this trigger that like made them very uncomfortable. And the best way to describe it is they went back to that comfort zone. And it's so easy to do. And I think that's why it's just like, it's so important to be aware of when you're having the same, like, kind of like residual thoughts. And you're like, okay, hold on, time out, pump the brakes. What is triggering this? And how can I change that trigger to kind of turn it all around and make it where I'm more modern in my realistic terms of I'm here and now and not going back to the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, that's something, you know, that I have kind of, you know, helped people with, you know, their limiting beliefs and, you know, and because I've dealt with my own limiting beliefs and it's something that it's like, I can't just relax and say, oh, you know, I went through this life transformation and I'm good now.
Because, no, you don't do that.
because I've noticed, I mean, I lost weight when I, you know, lost weight before I started running. And then the things that I did to lose the weight and keep it off for that year, I quit doing. And so now I'm back at the first of the year of going, you know, I've got 20, I went to get rid of 20 pounds by the end of the year. Yeah. And, you know, I'm going back to what I did before of saying, here is at the first of the year, I'm saying I'm going to weigh under 200 pounds by the end of this year.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, we talked about resolutions, you know, what I had always done before was I'd set the goal, but I never said it that way. I never said I will be this weight by the end of the year. And that, saying it that way was what gave me the power to actually to change it. And so now I'm like, okay, I'm back at paying attention to the fact that I'm not going to make those compromises with especially sugar. I mean, for me, that was the thing is like sugar.
that's such a hard one too, because sugar is addicting in itself.
Right.
You know, so sometimes it's not always you. So let me ask you this. What are some limiting beliefs that you have currently that you've identified?
Oh, but that I'm not good enough.
That's a hard one.
That's one. And that wasn't really the one that kind of tagged along with some of the ones that I had dealt with, you know, back in 2017.
Yeah.
But that's still, the fear, I mean, we're in the public space. You and I are both kind of in the same thing. It's like, we have to put our ideas out here, you know, put our ideas out. And I find that I can create, you know, I can create stuff that, you know, that I'm going to put out. And then I feel this resistance to actually hit publish, hit print, hit, you know, hit start. And so there's a rant. In fact, it's probably going to show up here on YouTube. that I have held on to for you know for years, and I just it's probably gonna get both sides of the issue are going to think I'm off my rocker, and so, but it's something that I hear and I hear preachers say that your soul is your mind, your will, and your emotions, and the soul is one entity. And it is, you know, it is made up of three parts, but so that's coming. I'm going to be but I had this idea because it, every time I hear, you know, Christian people talk about the soul, I'm like, well, you know, you're really minimizing it and it's a big deal. And so that's something that has bothered me for quite a while. And so I'm going to do something and put it out and say, here's what I am, here's what I believe. But I feel at the same time, I feel this resistance and I put it off and that's just one example. I mean, there's a lot of things that I have held back, I guess. I feel like I held myself back.
Yeah. I'm right there with you in the creative field where it's like one day you're great. You think all your ideas are awesome. And then the next day you're like, oh my God,
what was I thinking?
Anybody like me? Yeah, and you constantly struggle with that. And that's the hardest thing to surpass. So I'm like right there with you. It's just like, I wouldn't say mine's like, I'm not good enough. I don't think I've ever said that to myself. Mine's always been, why me? You know, like, what's so special about me? I wouldn't say I'm not good enough, but I'm like, why me? You know? But then there's the other side of me where it's just like, sometimes I can see it where I'm like, I think so much differently. I actually, you know, I have such a bigger drive to like want to help and like reach out to people. And there are some people that are like, I want to say to myself, leave me alone. I got my job. I'm good. Like, I want nothing else. But like in my mind, I'm like, that's not me. Like, that's just so not me. Like, I think I've told you, I've tried the 9-to-5 job. I've really tried. I work part time now. Don't get me wrong. But I've tried that 9-to-5 job. My soul died. I tried so many different things. I was like, all right, I got to do my own thing because it's just not going to work. It's just not, this is not going to be how my life goes. And that in itself of being a creator, being somebody that's not just following, just hitting the ladder and climbing my way up the corporate ladder, has actually been more mentally draining than I ever thought it would be. I thought it would be freeing. It's not. Mm-hmm. For anybody like listening, like everyone thinks like, oh, if you're an entrepreneur, you get to make your schedule and sleep in and do this and that. And I'm like, no. You don't. Like, you're working harder than anybody else. You're working for what other people think of nothing, but for you, it's a purpose. But to them, they're like, you're not even getting paid. And you're like, I know. And they're like, why are you doing this? I mean, like, I'm waking up to run at 3:30 in the morning so I can start working by like 5:30 because I've got so much to do, like all these podcasts, editing, other things. You know, the list goes on and on and on. And it's just like, sometimes I'm like, why am I doing this? Like, why don't I just go get that job and just like call it a day? But like the other part of me is like, no, you can do this. It's like, you have something in you more. And it's just such a weird, lonely life because like when other people are off, you're working, it's just odd, right?
Mm-hmm. It is. And then you have to, I mean, you get to set your schedule, but
yeah,
you have to get the work done. And that's the thing. And so, that's just part of it. And the thing that always you talk about, you know, hot buttons, people say, well, if you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life. I'm like, hell no. I said, you'll find yourself doing what you love for maybe 20% of the time. And then the other 80% of the time, you're working to do all the administrative stuff and the sales and the marketing and the accounting and all of the stuff that goes along with that allows you to do the 20% of what you really love.
Exactly. And I think that's the problem. Like that's, you know, everybody signed up for this and they're like, because I always think, well, why doesn't everybody do what they love? And I'm like, oh, I get it now. I get it.
Well, and then there was the line from a movie called Hope Floats. I was watching with my wife and the one line I remember was the woman asked the guy, says, well, you know, you designed this house, is why aren't you working as an architect? And he says, well, if you take the thing that you love and try to twist it so that you can make money out of it, it becomes something you don't love. And that's the other thing. And it was a very powerful, I mean, that's the only thing I remember. I remember some other things from the movie, but that one line has stuck with me. Is that if you take what you love and you try to make it profitable, sometimes it kills it. And that's
really interesting.
That's something you really have to, I mean, you can think about, you know, I have found it's better to find something that you're talented at and kind of like, and but my wife and I, you know, we've been self-employed for, you know, a long time and we ended up painting. And when I was younger, I hated painting. And then it ended up, that was how I was making my living. And wow. I got to be where I got talented at it and was good at it. And so, I got to where I still enjoy it. I enjoy painting things. So
that's interesting. That's funny. That is funny. It just always switches with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you don't discount the things that you can learn how to be good at, because and it's been very profitable. It's been a very profitable business.
I mean, that's good. You need to.
Yeah.
To live.
Yeah. So, we didn't get to talk about your running. We started out a little bit, but you've got some races coming up. So tell what's your running future is going
to
be?
So, like I said at the beginning of this podcast, I'm trying to get into ultras. But before that, and I keep telling my friends this, I'm working my way into the Boston Marathon. Like, I have to run this Boston Marathon. And I know everybody around me is like, you can't put your whole life and identity into this marathon. I don't think people realize, like, it was taken from me. Like, it was stolen
from, yes. I mean, you, I followed you on social media, and that was, just suffice it to say that they were not the,
oh man,
it was not done. A lot of you who had qualified in, was it 2019?
2019. You qualified and then gypped.
In 2020. So,
and there's a whole story. I'm not going to go into that story.
Yeah, I know. It's a long story, but just suffice it to say that Boston Marathon people did not treat their entrance very well in 2020.
And it's just funny because I think my best way to describe it is, like, have you ever lost at something five times and you didn't even get to the event, but you lost five times? And just like, I don't understand. It's like 3 years later, you're still losing. That's how I feel about the Boston Marathon. So, like, my focus right now, I think it's on March 19th. Like, I should know this, like, back of my hand, but right now I'm just so focused in my training, is to qualify for Boston Marathon of 2023. So I'm really focused. Sights are set on March 19th. It's Tomoka Marathon up in Ormond Beach. And I'm going to try to get 316, 317. I'd love 317, 22. I know it sounds crazy, but I love the number 13. So 17, if I get 317, it's 13 minutes faster than my qualifying time. And 22 is like another favorite number. All has to do with Taylor Swift. It's all okay. Time. Okay. Don't worry about it. And then, so that is my goal right there, 317. That's like a 7:30 pace for the full marathon. My training has been awesome. I did 20 miles today. It took me about 3 hours flat for a training run, for my first 20-mile training run. That was awesome.
That's a good time for a training run, yeah.
My body feels good. My mind feels good. I'm running faster than I have in a long time. A lot of it was limiting beliefs and mental blocks of why I just couldn't really pick myself up the past 2 years because of Boston. And then after that, I want to do, and I mean, anybody listening to this can sign up with me. I want to do this race out in Bryan Head, Utah. And it's under a meteor shower. It's under Poseidon meteor shower. I couldn't tell you the name of it. But it's under a meteor shower. And they have waves that go from 7 a.m. all the way to every 30 minutes to 6 a.m. So you can run at 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. in the middle of the night under a meteor shower for a half marathon.
So you start at 7 p.m.
7 p.m. to 6 a.m. Yeah. And you can run a half marathon in the middle of the night underneath a meteor shower. And if you've ever been out west with the stars,
it's
gorgeous.
Yeah, it's beautiful. So
that's in August. Definitely going to do that as a, like, a go-to race. And of course, little races in between here. And then probably around that time, that's when I'm going to start looking into ultras. Okay. And I'll probably pick the flattest ultra I can find because I live in Florida. I'm not training in mountains. I'm not even going to try. I'm not even putting myself through that. I just want to go out and be happy.
there's an ultra. Well, It's a hundred miles. Well, you can do the 50 miles, running to Key West. You're running the bridges.
Oh yeah. They do have that one. They have a couple of Ragnars too. I don't know if I've seen that all through the Key West, but that's a good one to look into.
Cause I heard a guy in my chi running instructor ran that, last year, and he did the 100 mile. The day was too hot. Then I also had a podcast guest, Sean Bemis, who did the 50 mile version of that.
Oh, wow. And so, yeah, that's awesome.
But yeah,
I would definitely, I really want to do a 50K. I think that's 30.
Yeah, I would
miles.
Start with a 50K. 50 miles is
it's a lot.
It's the difference. Actually, it's for people who run marathons, that extra, you know, 5 miles to make it a 50K is a lot. I mean, it puts the whole race into a whole different category. And it sounds like, oh yeah, you run 26. Why not? Well, you know, what's another five, but you know, usually that's, you get into that, you know, 30, you know, 28, 30 miles. And it's, you find a whole level of things going on in your body that you don't get at 26 miles.
Well, I'm fully prepared for that. Cause I've heard a lot of marathoners be like, oh, it's another 5 miles. And I've thought, thought through it. I'm like, that's a lot. Another 5 miles could kill me. like legit. We're not even like pretending at this point where, you know, I'm going to go into this cocky, like, oh, I'm a marathon runner. It's going to be fine. No, I would be training for that 5 miles. Like, I'm going to be fighting for that 5 miles if I sign up for a 50K. And I know going into it. So, like, my mind is already there.
Well, and the strategy, even at the beginning of the race, has to be different because, you know, you have to take time to eat. I mean, you really, you know, there's a lot of things. And that's kind of ultra runners. We say that it's an eating contest with some running thrown in.
That's really fun to see. I don't eat goos. I don't have anything when I run marathons. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a whole new world.
And you
to
can
me.
Do, you can do that.
I have to. Yeah.
And goos don't, I'm not a goo person either, but, baby food is great. It's pureed fruit.
Interesting. I mean, full circle. Yeah.
Well, it's pureed fruit and, you know, right. And so, those tend to agree with me. Sweet potatoes, right. Good. Sweet potatoes are good too.
That's funny.
And so, but yeah, you need to eat actually before, you know, you can't wait for 26 miles. You really need to eat, you know, 10 miles or so at least. So
to keep going. Yeah. Absolutely.
To keep going. Yeah. Well, that's cool. That's, exciting to hear, to see that, but yeah, ultra marathons are a whole different thing. And then of course there's a lot of people get sucked into, well, I've run 50K. When are you going to run 50 miles? When, you know, they always go to the next distance and
it's addictive.
And, yeah. It is addictive. And you know, part of something, and we didn't have time to talk about it tonight, but you talked about your identity as a runner, and there's so many people put their identity into what they can do as a runner. And, you know, it's just their emotions and who they are is tied up into, well, I'm a runner and I do this. And if I can't, then, you know, your identity suffers.
And I'll tell you right now, that's what happened to me the past 2 years when Boston was taken away. You know, like my whole identity was, oh, I'm running the Boston Marathon. And it like was taken, like, you know, just taken away. And I had to redefine myself. I had to say, you know, it doesn't make me less of a runner that I've qualified for Boston and haven't run it. You know, like maybe to some people, they like look at it differently, but like it took a lot of like mindset work of being like, you're nothing less just because you didn't run the actual Boston Marathon, you know? So it took a lot, but yeah, my whole identity was in running. I mean, my relationships around me suffered, work suffered, a lot of things suffered from just that one fall. You know, that was more devastating than like bad breakups I've had. And like, it's sad because it's like, oh my God, you know, like the ex is over here fighting with me. I'm like, I don't care. I don't care.
Let me go run.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So like it makes sense. And a lot of people know exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, I've talked to people that are going through divorces. They don't care because they're running an, you know, ultra marathon or a marathon. And it's just like, that's a very dangerous place to be because something could be taken away from you. You have to know who you are.
Yeah. And the thing is, we tend to, you know, I think just in the way our society is raised is that we have our identity in things outside of ourselves. And it's, you know, could be car. And I mean, the advertisers make their money off of that, of saying, you know, you need this car, you need this, you know, and it's all tied to making you be the person, but it's always outside. And so, there's a guy that I listened to a podcast and it really helped me of saying that you do the things that you do from who you are. It's not the things that you do to make you And so, so he says, and so many people say, well, I do this and do this and I have that. And so, you know, you ask somebody, you know, what do you do? And when we talk about our job, I mean, it's all of our identity, the things that we think about ourselves are outside of us. And a lot of times, and so that's a lot of what I do as a mindset coach is to say, live your life from who you are. And the cool thing is you get to decide who you want to be.
Who you are. Yeah. It's
because,
true.
You know, that was part of what my change was. I didn't like who I was, you know, and that's, you know, you kind of, we talked a little bit about body image. You know, you, Yeah. Look at that. And I wanted something different, and I couldn't get it because I kept, you know, it was all outside of me. And what, you know, what do people think? What am I doing? And when I finally kind of came to the center and said, no, I get to decide who I am and live from that, I started doing the things that it was like, this is cool. I'm able to do things. Yeah. Hey, thank you a lot, Sierra. I have, before we go, this is something new I'm going to do. Ooh. And so I call them the bridge questions. And since this is on video and live, I'm gonna play this clip.
Ooh!
Stop! Who approaches the bridge of death must answer me these questions three. The other side, he see.
Ask me the questions, Bridgekeeper. I'm not afraid.
I love this. This is so funny.
So that comes from Monty Python. And I was like, you know, there's other podcasts who do this, you know, kind of have questions at the end.
Yeah.
And it's like that, you know, every time that clip plays in my mind, my family, we kind of quote Monty Python anytime we get a chance. It's like I call these the bridge questions. So three questions for you before we go.
I got you. I'm ready.
What is your must-have running gear?
Must-have running gear. Oh my gosh, headphones.
Okay.
Headphones all the way. The races that have maybe not used headphones were dramatic.
For training as well?
AirPods, yes, AirPods, absolutely. Because it's training. Just like, that is what, you know, my music, that's my space, that's everything. Like, I could run in like shorts, flip-flops, and t-shirt, but like, as long as I had headphones on, I'm good.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay. Weirdest thing that you have either found or seen while you're out on the run?
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a really, really, really good one. Weirdest thing. You know, I'm going to have to say, gosh, I could probably think of a bunch. One of the most incredible things I've ever seen was actually a stingray. So it was going through the water and it had both fins up. And it was going like through the water, and then it would like splash and go down, and it would come up and it would like swim around with both fins. So it looked like two sharks next to each other. It was really interesting. I tried to get a picture of it, and it goes underwater. I'm like, ah, oh, okay. But like, that was cool. That was a very memorable one.
Cool. Okay. Third question. A word or phrase that describes your life philosophy.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I can do two. Okay, sure. So one, my first one is work until you no longer have to introduce yourself. I always found that one really powerful. And the other one is everything happens for a reason. Super cliche, but I'm telling you, if you can just keep repeating that to yourself, oh, it makes life so much easier when weird things happen.
Yeah.
You just have to find that reason.
Well, cool. Yes. You have to find that reason. And again, be honest with yourself about what the reason is. A lot of my life I spent blaming other people. You know, like, oh, well, you know, my reason was not a reason. It was an excuse. And I always try to make sure that I have, you know, what the reason is. And a lot of times it's my responsibility. So.
Big time.
Yeah,
cool. Big time. Most of the time.
Well, tell people where they can find you.
So if you want to find me, I'm always on Instagram. Instagram's my favorite, at Run Thrive Survive on every single platform. I'm also on TikTok. I have a lot of fun reels, so you know.
You have great reels on that.
Yeah. And then like everything else, runthrivesurvive.com, and check out my podcast, Run Thrive Survive.
Great. Well, thanks a lot for being here, Sierra. I appreciate it.
Thank you. This was a blast. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. Hope you enjoyed the things that Sierra had to say. And if you found it helpful and want to get in touch with her, check out the links in the show notes page, which, by the way, the show notes you can find at ultramindsetpodcast.run. Now, please remember, it is .run. I still forget that. Even though I created this this website, ultramindsetpodcast.run, a lot of times I still type .com after it because .com is what we all tend to type. But if you get a blank page and you don't get the show notes, go back and just follow in your memory. It's .run, not .com. So ultramindsetpodcast.run for the show notes for this show, as well as all the shows. You can find a podcast player there. Although if you're listening to podcasts, you probably have a podcast player of your own that you listen to your podcast on. But it's there on the website even so. So if you want to share this episode with somebody and they're not a podcast listener, you can share it from the podcast show notes, because I put a player on each show. Might be a way that you could get some of your friends who aren't really turned on to podcasts yet to start listening to podcasts. Would love it if you would recommend this podcast as one for them to listen to. If you did enjoy this show, please do take a time to send that to somebody who might enjoy it. Remember, an ultramarathon, boy, as much as I talk, sometimes I must stumble over my words still. An ultramarathon mindset is about more than just running. I am a mindset coach, and I would be glad to help you get over something, limiting beliefs, things that that you might be and have an obstacle to where you want to go as a runner or in life. Any big goal, I say I help people go after their epic thing. So if you're looking for your epic thing, for me it's ultramarathon running, but for you it might be something different. Leave me a voice message or text there at the podcast page, ultramindsetpodcast.run. And be glad to touch base with you and see if I can help you. Thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time.